Yo Pods, check out Meet Mitch and Leewood for award-winning barbecue, outstanding atmosphere, and your destination to watch all your favorite March Madness action. Tailgating for opening day? Place your order online and pick up on way to the game. Meet Mitch Barbecue, East 95th and Mission in Ranch Martin or Shopping Center.
Impress your friends. Amaze your coworkers. Make your family proud. Here's what you need to know. I'm going to tell
you
what
you need to know. All right, you need to know Zero Res has you covered. Get a room cleaned, get a carpet cleaned for $33 for a limited time right now. Go to ZeroRes.com for details. It is the only folks that we will have in cleaning our carpets. Phenomenal work, locally owned and operated. That is Zero Res. Check them out today. $33. ZeroResKC.com. ZeroResKC.com. to see more details right now. All right, we'll start things off. Drew Brees. I think this is going to be interesting. We were discussing this with everything that's going on and with the fact that the man who was calling for change when it comes to police brutality towards people of color, towards African Americans, was Colin Kaepernick, and the NFL took what it was he was asking for and pretty much said no go. You're kneeling and drawing attention to this. Nope, not interested in it. Don't want to hear it. And I think you're going to see a lot of NFL players back kneeling. I think it's going to be a subject we're going to be watching in the NFL this year. It got brought up. Drew Brees on Yahoo Finance this morning. Drew Brees was asked what he thought about players possibly kneeling when the season gets underway.
I will never agree with anybody disrespecting the flag of the United States of America or our country. Let me just tell you what I see or what I feel when the national anthem is played and when I look at the flag of the United States. I envision my two grandfathers who fought for this country during World War II, one in the Army and one in the Marine Corps, both risking their lives to protect our country and to try to make our country and this world a better place. So every time I stand with my hand over my heart, looking at that flag and singing the national anthem, that's what I think about. And in many cases, it brings me to tears, thinking about all that has been sacrificed, not just those in the military, but for that matter, those throughout the civil rights movements of the 60s, and everyone and all that has been endured by so many people up until this point. And is everything right with our country right now? No, it's not. We still have a long way to go. But I think what you do by standing there and showing respect to the flag with your hand over your heart is it shows unity. It shows that we are all in this together. We can all do better. And that we are all part of the solution.
Except for the fact that the people that I think will absolutely be taking a knee do not feel like they're in it together. Drew, what are you doing to go and make sure that, you know, I opened the website, and the Kansas City Star had a story about an African-American transgender person who was being arrested for something, and they had the video. A guy had stopped and had the video, and it was with Kansas City, Missouri police. Knee on neck, same way. Other one, knees on body. Two cops instead of three, but the exact same thing. Arms pulled up and being forced back up over the person's head. And the person that was filming it, sat there filming it, the cops hollered out their names and their badge numbers, were incredibly cavalier about what was going on. They ultimately they did lose their jobs for police brutality. And Kansas City, Missouri cited the person who did the filming, who led to the police brutality charges, which were convicted. They cited them for a misdemeanor crime of blocking traffic when there was no traffic on the street. Okay, that story, like I think the Kansas City Star brought out to say, hey, this is the culture of what is going on here. This happened in Kansas City. This person did not die, so there was not the outrage, but they were harmed. Blood-stained street left from where the head had been slammed into the street. And this person's filming saying, hey, back off. And so I think what Drew Brees doesn't get is that's Drew Brees' world.
Yes.
And nobody is saying they don't thank everyone who has stood on guard for this country, right? We all absolutely agree with it. But the America that he said we're all in it together, I don't think people, I think Drew Brees is tone deaf right now, because the African American community, I think, does feel a lot of support from a lot more white people now than when Colin Kaepernick was doing his kneeling. I think that the images are starkly different than they were 4 or 5 years ago, when protests were erupting, and there is much more of a national, okay, listen, I'm awake. I was like, okay, whatever. But now you've seen enough of this brutality that people are awakening. But Drew Brees is completely missing the boat. That's your experience, Drew. That is not the experience of a young African male growing up in difficult economic times and making his way through. That's not the experience. That's not the America. That's not the warmth that is felt by my friend, who I detailed the story of what he did with his son when he got into high school, was becoming a young adult, and said, this is now how you're viewed. It is not that we're all in it together. That is not the view that they have, okay? And I think it's just incredibly tone deaf by Drew Brees. And I think really anybody, to think that you're just supposed to shut out what is right now for a lot of people. This is what I think a lot of, I would say, affluent America, and certainly white America, and certainly in good economic stead white America doesn't understand, is it's not a great country to these people. You can blow that smoke up their ass all you want, okay? But it's not a great life for these people. Their life sucks, okay? And they're beaten down economically and physically by police, and that flag does not mean the same thing to them.
Well, and just a quick note, Saran, you had mentioned how is Drew Brees going to be received by different players. Tyrone Mathieu, obviously, of the Kansas City Chiefs, tweeted at Drew Brees, SMH, shaking my head, you represent New Orleans, Louisiana. Don't ever forget that. Hashtag bottom of the map.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's yeah. And there's stuff when Drew Brees says, well, when I see that, hear that anthem and that flag, I think of this and I think of that. No one's stopping you. You can still think of what you want when that anthem plays and that flag is there. No one's telling Drew Brees what he should think about when he thinks about the flag. What he they're not putting their opinions on him. I mean, if this week has taught anybody anything, it's that. I said to someone earlier, you know, if I'm ever involved in some accident and I need someone to come take my pulse, it's not going to be Drew Brees, because he clearly does not know how to do it, because he missed badly.
This is what I'm telling you, and this is the guy that's already been hired to be a color analyst.
Yes.
I've interviewed Drew Brees. That is not going to go well.
No.
I mean, he's tone deaf. And he has very little personality, and I respect his opinions, and that is great that that's what he sees. The problem that I think a lot of people that is what they see, they don't understand that's not what a lot of other people see. And they're not wrong. They just have different life experiences.
He literally said,
and if you want everybody to come in for the big celebration for the national anthem, then you need to help create an America that makes people look up at the American flag and look at it warmly.
Yeah, he literally said, like, this is what I think. So he's saying, what I think of the flag is from my own personal experience. He basically is saying that. How does he not understand that the other people have their own other personal experiences? I mean,
I don't know.
I don't get it.
That's going to be one interesting locker room. That yes. is going to be one interesting locker room down there. It's going to be an interesting season. This is not going away this time, because I don't think there's just too many NFL players that are not going to let it go away. I may be wrong, and feel free if you here's my statement. If you want to call, I had some people that wanted to, or one individual who wanted to tell me where I was wrong on things. Hey, I am always happy to admit I'm wrong. I will also tell you, with new information, I reserve the right to change my opinion, as we all should do, and I think generally do. But I think kneeling is coming to the NFL in an empty stadium. You're going to see players kneeling. This subject is not going away. Okay? It's going to happen.
And yes, Drew Brees clearly has the right to say this is what he thinks when he sees people kneel. Sure, fine, think that. But understand that, you are not. I hope he realizes that he is in the distinct minority, and realize that anybody else also has the right to say what you see is ridiculous.
And Seren, I'll retweet this from all of our accounts, but as we were talking about, Michael Jenkins, who is a teammate of Drew Brees, posted a now deleted video that Bleacher Report put out, said, quote, "You're somebody who I had a great deal of respect for, but sometimes you should shut the blank up."
Wow. Yeah. It's not going to be pretty. It is not going to be pretty. I mean, that listen, there's a time to talk about patriotism and recognizing our military, and we should be grateful every second of every day. But telling people how they should feel towards the country right now, not everybody's happy with what's going on, and their opinions matter as well. You can't tell somebody you've got to love your situation in life. You can't dictate to them. You can't make them like. Listen, and that then some people might have a great life, and they still think it sucks. But there are lots of people that don't. It's time, right? It's time for people to start realizing this.
Yeah.
I want to get to Vic Fangio real quick, because we got to get to Jeff Passan coming up here to talk some baseball. Yesterday said, hey, the NFL, there's no racism in the NFL. You know, it's completely, everybody gets exactly what they earned. Right? Everybody has exactly what they earned. He was lit up late last night and all through the morning today. He has sent Vic Fangio, the head coach of the Denver Broncos. He has since backpedaled. Here are his quotes from today. "After reflecting on my comments yesterday and listening to the players this morning, I realized what I said regarding racism and discrimination in the NFL was wrong. While I have never personally experienced those terrible things firsthand during my 33 years in the NFL, I understand that many players, coaches, and staff have different perspectives. I should have been more clear, and I am sorry. I wanted to make the point yesterday that there is no color within the locker rooms I have been in or on the playing fields I have coached on. Unfortunately, we don't live or work only within those confines. Outside of those lines, both in the NFL and society, there's a lot of work to be done in the areas of diversity and providing opportunities across the board for minorities. As the head coach, I look forward to listening to the players, both individually and collectively, to support them and work hand in hand to create meaningful change." Now, that's good for me. Like, I you know, Vic Fangio, to me, made a mistake, and he's owning up to it. I mean, I think there's some other things that could have been said. Curtis, I heard you sigh.
Well, it's maybe in an individual case, it's okay, but so many of those things, how many times are we going to hear someone say something awful and then go, you know, that was what I said was wrong. I shouldn't have said that. Well, I think that's a situation where someone's speaking what they think and what they feel, and then they get the backlash and they think, oh, I need to pull back on this and say something. I think people are much more the comments they make when they aren't thinking about it than they are when they are thinking about what they're going to say.
Absolutely.
And it's measured. If Vic Fangio had said that and then gotten on a motorcycle and ridden across Canada for a month, would it occur to him along his ride that he had said something wrong? No, it was, the outlash he got from it.
It is, but if the outlash teaches him what he needs to learn, I don't think the man should be condemned for learning it late.
Oh, I agree with that. I'm with you on that one.
I will say this. I think it's a legitimate question to say, is he still believe exactly what he felt the day before, and this is just the CYA move to get him out of trouble?
Mm-hmm.
Or is he a guy that went, okay, wait a minute, he read the comments, he listened to what people are saying, and he went, you know what, I didn't look at it that way. I made a mistake. I'm wrong. And listen, I think that's one thing you've got to be careful. When people come to your side,
yeah,
you can't shun them because they weren't there 2 years ago.
Agreed.
If the process has educated them and brought them along, then, you know, then welcome them and bring them, you know, with you. If they've come part of the way and you can take them the rest of the way, then do it. I don't think Vic Fangio is I don't know Vic Fangio. I think Vic Fangio waited a long time to be a head coach and wanted to be a head coach and finally got it. And so that was his, hey, I finally showed him I got what I deserved. But I think he is completely, I think he has lived in isolation from the life that other African-American coaches have had to live. And hopefully, I don't think his learning is done. I don't think my learning is done. I don't think any of ours is done. But I think if the guy did take a step and come, you know, a ways down the road, then I don't think the man should be condemned. What is that different from what he said? Now, who says it is important? How different is what he said, which or his original statement was, I think our problems in the NFL along those lines are minimal. He did acknowledge problems. Mm-hmm. He just said they were minimal. We're a league of meritocracy. You earn what you get. You get what you earn. I don't see racism at all in the NFL. I don't see discrimination in the NFL. Being a head coach and having the topic of the Rooney Rule be such a big one in the last 2 weeks, that's clearly tone deaf for him to be saying that, because it's a coach saying it. But how different is what he's saying from Patrick Mahomes saying the locker room is a brotherhood? Who says it matters.
Yeah.
But Patrick Mahomes said, I grew up in a locker room where everybody was in it together. And Patrick Mahomes pretty much said the locker room, there is no racism.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I agree with that.
Again, who says it? The context of who says it does matter.
And if he had been more specific and said locker room on his original statement, maybe that's what he meant. I think there would have been less blowback. Maybe today was just a clarification, this is what I meant, and that's fine. And if he's on the team, I got no problem. Hop on board. There's plenty of room.
Yeah. I think the responses need to be measured. Everyone who makes a mistake – like Vic Fangio, mm-hmm. it's not the cop with his knee on the neck of Floyd.
100% agree.
Right?
Yep.
So just, I think, a perspective to keep there. We will take a break. Jeff Passan is coming up next, Major League Baseball insider. We'll talk about where is baseball. Everybody else is up and running, not baseball. When's that going to happen? We talk to Jeff Passan about that next.
The program with Soren Petro.
He has the body of Adonis, but the eating habits of Homer Simpson.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Husband, father, Elmo impersonator.
Yeah!
He wrote The Arm and is currently writing its follow-up, The Leg. He has everyone's phone number, even yours. He's MLB insider Jeff Passan of ESPN. Only on the program.
Yes, indeed. Time to talk some baseball. Not their best day in Major League Baseball. Jeff Passan brought to you by our friends at Joe's Kansas City Barbecue. You can grab it on your way home, joeskc.com. And, of course, don't forget about Kansas City Barbecue Store. If you're cooking more at home, grills, smokers, sauces, rubs, utensils, even the meat itself, and, of course, all the know-how and how to put it all together, that's the Kansas City Barbecue Store. They're at 119th and Strangline, the Kansas City BBQ Store. com. That is where you can find them. And don't forget Father's Day right around the corner. Gift cards to Joe's Kansas City are good at the Kansas City Barbecue Store and at Joe's. So Dad can grab himself some stuff at the Kansas City Barbecue Store and even get some food over at the Joe's across the parking lot there at 119th and Strangline. Let's talk to Jeff Passan here on our Sprint guest line. Jeff, how are you, sir?
This is the greatest sponsorship I have ever had or will ever have. The fact that Barbecue is sponsoring any segments I'm on right now makes me feel like the truest Kansas Cityan of all time.
As you should, my friend. First of all, good to talk to you. It's been a while. I hope you and the family are all good.
I am in the car right now driving the older one to baseball practice. So
very good.
Life is starting to get back to a little bit normal.
Okay.
And yet here I am at the moment. I was just on SportsCenter, and I am currently wearing a shirt, a tie, and a pair of running shorts. So
yeah.
Things really aren't all that normal.
Literally just trucking out of the house. I love it. All right.
Yeah.
So the owners turned down the 114-game proposal. They knew they were going to do that as soon as they got it. What took so long?
I think that they've been strategizing, honestly. And I think that the owners know that they are in somewhat of a position of strength at this moment. And the position of strength, Soren, is very simple. they have the ability through this March 26th agreement to implement a season of the length of their desire. Whatever Rob Manfred wants to put in place as a season, he can do. And this was elucidated to the players during a phone call with Tony Clark, who runs the union, and Bruce Meyer, the lead negotiator. It essentially, and I'm paraphrasing here, was said, if you want your full prorated salary, which means if you want to get paid what you would get paid per game for however many games we play, we will give that to you. It's just not going to be as many games as you want. And we will give that to you as per the terms of this agreement that we made in March for as many games as we want to. And now the players are in something of an awkward position, right? Because they have wanted the full prorated salary this whole time, but they also, Seren, want to play more games. They want to play more games because, A, more games are great and baseball is awesome, but, B, because the more games they play, the more they get paid. So it's a very awkward impasse that we're at right now. And while there's a significant amount of negativity going around, I try to focus on, I like to deem these the rational, smart people in my phone, the people who I go to when I'm getting worried that something going on is going to have a negative effect on the sport. And these rational, smart, pragmatic people all still believe that there is going to be baseball at some point in 2020. So I'm with them. I still think that there's baseball coming, but there's a ways to go to still get there, and there are a lot of fascinating machinations that are going to be going on before it happens.
Is 50 just a tool, a saber to be rattled, 50 games towards the players, or is there real economic reason why that gets it done? Like, is 50 what it takes to get, you know, X number or X percentage of the television contracts, and they don't get another chunk of money till they get to like 90? Like, what's magical about 50?
I don't know that there's anything in particular that magical about it, Seren. I think that the issue is that owners have been saying and will continue to say that they're not going to be making money this year if they play more games than that and if they pay full prorated salaries. They're concerned about dollars here. And look, it's understandable. They stand to lose billions upon billions of dollars at this point by just having a season. I mean, it's not great. Like, the economic stuff that has been going on here, we've seen how it's hit other businesses. It's hitting baseball, too. That being said, the idea that they're going to lose more money this year playing games than they would lose over the long haul by not playing games or by playing what I think a lot of people at 50 games would see as a short, and not just short, but invalid season. It is a very hard argument to make, I think, if you're the owners. And that's why the players are standing pat and saying, yes, we want our full prorated salaries. We also, by the way, want them to be over a representative number of games. The issue here, though, is this, Seren. The players are going to come back regardless. If there is a season that is put into place by Rob Manfred, the players have to come back. They can't strike. It would be an illegal strike. They would be up for all sorts of issues based on that. But what the players have going for them is that a playoff system that's expanded beyond 10 teams to 14, which is something that would be worth a lot of money to Major League Baseball and something that they absolutely want to implement this year, could not be unilaterally implemented for this March agreement. The players have to agree to something like that. And there is no way that if Rob Manfred goes and says, you're playing this, show up, that the players are going to do any favors for the league.
So what's the next step? What are we waiting on now?
I think at this point it's probably going to be some kind of I don't know if there's going to be a date set by which Major League Baseball says that it's going to have the support of the owners and is going to implement this plan. But I think if there is something like that or a sense of when this would be in place, It's going to be interesting to see if the players bend at all. And I don't. Here's the thing. I don't think that the players bending would show weakness. I worry that they believe that it shows weakness and that that's something going into the 2021 season when the collective bargaining agreement is expiring, something that they absolutely do not want to do. So there's that element to it, too. You've got all of these competing things going on at once, Seren. And it's really like, listen, I hate the fact that there's no baseball. I think it's utterly absurd that they pissed away an incredible opportunity, which they did. Both sides had an incredible opportunity, if they had come together on financial parameters, to have a representative season that lasted for, you know, at least 80 games, probably more like 90 or 100, and that brought baseball back and gave it at least 1 month and probably more like 6 week head start on the NBA. Instead, the best case scenario we're looking at right now is an agreement that's in place, let's say, 5 days from now. I think that's best case. So that takes us to, is that June 7th? You've lost eighth. Track of time, I assume, just
June
like
8th.
June 8th. So June 8th. We're going to need at least 10 days to get people to spring training at that point. Like, and that is a fast timeline right there. I'm talking about people coming in from foreign countries. I'm talking about people having intake screenings for coronavirus. I'm talking about all the different complications that we've got going on there. So we're looking at June 18th at earliest to start spring training. After that, you've got 3 weeks. And so let's count the 3 weeks out. You know, June 18th to the 25th. 25th, you're at July 2nd then. July 2nd to July 9th. So let's bake in a couple extra days there for travel to get to your first. We're talking July 12th probably, the earliest that we can see regular season games. The NBA starts 19 days later. The NBA playoffs start a month later. So baseball, instead of having, a good 6 weeks to really build up before the NBA starts, now has less than 3 weeks. And now has about a month until the playoffs begin. That's a bad, bad place for a league that already is struggling with national relevance to be.
Agreed. And how much should they fear the NBA? Not just that the NBA this year is going to be overlapping them, but that there's a lot of momentum for them to move their season back and for them to be going toe-to-toe with the NBA playoffs.
I think they should be really scared. And, the NBA wants to move its season, Seren, because it doesn't fear MLB. That's sort of like the other part of it. It's not just how much should MLB fear the NBA. It's that the NBA thinks so little of baseball that it would be willing to move its season. And I think that is something that's going to become more and more realistic, the idea of an NBA season that starts at Christmas and goes forward. You know, you've got most of the NFL out of the way at that point. And from then on, I mean, the sort of spring months already are the NBA's. It wants to capture summer as well. And I think that's something that is well within the realm of possibility. And if you're Major League Baseball and you're losing that market share during a time that's supposed to be yours, man, that is a problem for the sport, no question about it.
Well, and then they also, the NBA offseason is one of the richest off seasons going because there are great storylines, free agents move, there are trades. You know, the baseball offseason has gotten quite boring, and that NBA offseason where we know ESPN, how much time they dedicate at night to, like, the clock, that first night, everything that's going on, and then all the moves, that starts to butt up against your playoffs and detract from your playoffs. Baseball can't afford to be away for a year, can it? I mean, if everybody shut down, everybody shut down. But to choose not to play, whether it's the players or the owners, that they can't have that, can they, when it's all said and done?
I mean, they can. It would just be at their own peril. The reality is no. Of course they shouldn't. Of course, it would be utterly absurd for them to make that choice. Of course, it would be mutually assured destruction coming to reality. But that is the path that they have reasonably put themselves on at this point. And it's sad to see, but it's, I mean, Seren, you've been a baseball fan for a long time. It may be sad, but how surprising is it?
Not at all. And can you help? I know it's always I know it's always been this way, but why is the relationship between ownership and players seemingly the worst in this sport?
Because they don't trust each other, because there's never been a great incentive for them to trust each other, because the history of the sides is a story that gets told and retold, because there are insecurities among some of the parties that I think allow them to have to rely on this crutch of distrust. That's what it goes down to. It's a three-pronged issue. It's money, it's power, and it's trust. They have incredible amounts of money that they are fighting over. They have a power dynamic that has flipped in recent years, and thus the players in this case are trying to claw back some of the power that they've lost, and they have huge gaps in trust. And when you put all three of those things in a cauldron together, Seren, the stew that you get is fetid and awful, and that's where negotiations are right now between MLB and the Players Association.
How much of it comes from, I try to float this theory, and I get that it's handed down, the new players come up and the old players tell them the owners suck, and you know, it's this cycle. You know, I've likened it to the KUMU rivalry and how, you know, it's telling a 2-year-old Mizzou sucks or KU sucks, and it just festers there. But how much of it, though, at a time when, you know, because like they're different than all the other leagues seemingly. And the one thing that they have that's different is they've never had a salary cap. Now, I know they've got a luxury tax now, and that serves as a diet salary cap. So it's they're inching down that road. But that, you know, the owners don't trust the other owners, right? Like, they've never been able to get all the owners to go into business fully together. Everybody just kind of does their own thing.
Yeah, I don't know that they're ever going to do that. And I don't think it has been nearly as much of an impediment now or even in the last quarter century, Seren, than it was before 1994. Something changed in 1994. And I think that the league got a lot smarter, and that devotion to being as pragmatic as possible, and despite the differences in market size, despite the differences in philosophy, despite the differences that are so manifold between, say, the Kansas City Royals and the New York Yankees, because of their markets, because of their television contracts, because of the inherent benefits that exist in New York that simply do not and cannot in Kansas City, they've recognized that fighting over these things ends up dividing the league, and that a divided group is a weak group. And so to mitigate those weaknesses, they have put aside a number of those issues, or at very least tried to ignore them, even to their detriment, understanding that the benefits that they would reap from togetherness far outweigh whatever those individual detriments are. And it has been, to me, the single biggest factor in the flip-flop in bargaining power over the last quarter century, and really where things have gone sideways for the players.
We're talking to Jeff Passan here in the program. What have they been doing the last 85, or maybe a better way to put it is, what did they do the first 75 days of this? Why weren't there more substantial talks along the way before now? I ask this of all the sports, because it seems like now all of a sudden we're cramming at the end, and it's like, you know, they almost thought that they would never be allowed out of their house again. Why didn't they have?
I think that's a big part of what this was. I think if you look, for example, at Major League Baseball, you know, they, like, everybody who works at baseball and works at the union lives in New York. And we have to recognize that as much as life here in Kansas City was way different, but not totally foreign. Like, don't get me wrong. It was eerie for a little while here, and there were fewer cars on the streets, and it sucked that businesses were not open. But if you wanted to go to a, you know, go to the grocery store, you still could. And if you wanted to go to a gas station, you still could. New York City was like a ghost town. And I think that actually got into the heads of a lot of the people who were involved there in thinking it's going to be really difficult to bring this back. I think that probably happened with the NFL too. I think that probably happened with the NBA too, all the sports leagues. There was a coronavirus myopia that was the case and was understandable. Like, did you see the pictures and videos of New York? Like, I would have friends every day send me pictures and videos of outside of their apartments, normally these bustling, vibrant areas that were just dead. And beyond that, the toll, the human toll, the financial toll, all of these things that made life seem like it was never going to come back to normal, it's easy to get caught up in that and try and figure that stuff out before figuring out the rest.
Yeah, I get that. And I get that it's unprecedented times. Nobody knows. There was no, for baseball, there was no blueprint. There was no playbook. I know there were governmental ones, but for baseball, there was no playbook. Okay, here's how you handle it and go from it. I do get that. But at some point, there had to be, you know, like, hey, we
I
need
agree.
To get this.
Especially, no. Listen, man, you're not wrong. Like, when you know that there's a financial impasse, figure it out. And I think there was a disagreement very early on in what it was going to look like. And when Major League Baseball came to the conclusion that, God, this is worse than we thought, and we're not going to have fans in the stands, and if we don't have fans in the stands, we're going to lose this much money. If we lose this much money, we can't pay players their full pro rata, and if players are going to be holding out on that full pro rata, we're kind of stuck here. Yeah, they should have done better. I think that everyone would admit they should have tried to get this thing done earlier. But as long as the players, Seren, were holding on to the full pro rata, this was going to have a really difficult time going anywhere. And the players still, this deep into the negotiations, have not relented from that important thing for them.
So what does this do for the collective bargaining agreement negotiations that come up after 21? You know, your buddy Buster Olney said, hey, when they sit down, as they figure this out, they should just not get up from the table and go ahead and figure out the CBA and roll the problems now, you know, kind of make almost 20 the first year of the next one. It does not sound like there's any momentum towards that.
No, Seren, I look at this like I look at my children. I would love to say that my children are going to learn an important lesson, and that I can take that learning of an important lesson and compound it into making them the best people humanly possible. But that's just a foolish thing. Take care of what's at hand first, and don't try to do too much, because you don't want to screw up right now in order to try and service what's to come. And look, maybe that's something that in a more functional relationship could happen, but this ain't a functional relationship.
If we were to just take a look over the horizon when the owners start talking about revenue sharing, doesn't it seem like that's where their head is for after 21, when that gets mentioned this year, that's their thought on where they're going to start talking in 21?
Sure is. And where are we going to go when that comes up? Nowhere.
But should we go nowhere? Because, you know, finally the owners seem to have been able, through hiring math guys, to hold their water when it comes to free agency and salaries. The last 2 years, the players' percentage of revenues have gone down. That used to never happen. You know, are any of the players scared that the owners have finally figured out how not to just blow up the salary structure? Are any of the players that know that they're never going to get the, I get the statement that every guy walking into that clubhouse thinks he's going to get the $400 million contract. They might, when they walk into that clubhouse, they might. You're young, you're really good at what you do if you've gotten to the big leagues. But everybody walks into that clubhouse. I don't think Whit Merrifield thought that there was a $400 million contract when he walked in there at age 27, having never hit 40 home runs or 30 home runs in the minor leagues. He may have thought $100 million deals out there, 150. But is there? But once you've been in the league 6-7 years, you know who you are. You've grabbed, particularly anybody who's grabbed a different mitt than what they carried in the minor leagues, they know versatility. Once you recognize versatility is part of what keeps you in the big leagues and gets you paid, then you know you're not getting the Bryce Harper contract. Are we getting to enough, like the middle class of Major League Baseball is being cut out. Are we getting, it's obvious the owners tried the play of, listen, there's more of the have-nots than there are the haves, and so we're going to appeal to the have-nots with this revenue sharing thing. That was their play. And that does work. It worked in the NFL with the collective bargaining agreement this year. The big contract guys didn't want to hear it, but there were more of the have-nots, NFL caliber have-nots. Is that arriving in baseball?
I don't see it happening. And you're, like, your logic here is not wrong. I just think that when we talk about the history of these parties, right, I think the history comes a lot into this. And from the moment that you become a member of the Major League Baseball Players Association, you are told that this is the one sport that does not have a salary cap, and that is something that we are incredibly proud of. And if there is such pride in that idea, I'm not sure there's anything that the MLB or that Major League Baseball could give the PA in order to make something like a salary cap a reality.
Yeah, well, enjoy tanking because it's the only option you got. I mean, you could beat your chest about no cap, but there's no floor either. So you enjoy teams filled with minimum salaried players because I think it's coming. I think the owners have figured it out. There's no reason to pay a guy $9 million a year when 94% of him comes up out of the minors and plays for the league minimum.
Yeah. Here's the question, though, Seren. Do you think Gerrit Cole gets $324 million if there's a salary cap?
I don't, but I think he might get to, well, first of all those pitching contracts are going to start blowing up in their face. That will happen. It happened when they blew up, you know, with the Mike Hamptons and the Kevin Browns, and all we need is for a few teams to be sitting on 5 years of crap, you know, crap production or no production while paying this out, and I think we'll see that change. No, I don't, but I think we might have seen $225 million for Gerrit Cole, and we might have seen a 6-year deal for Mike Moustakas. You know, Mike Moustakas might not have played the last 2 years on 1-year deals.
See, Seren, I don't think that's the case. I think I don't think that you brought up a great point that teams are smarter now. Because there's a cap system, why would that change the calculus on the lower level players? It wouldn't. Teams are going to be smart when it comes to those players from now on. They just are. The fact that Mike Moustakas got $64 million from Cincinnati over 4 years was damn near a miracle. Like, and listen, I like Mike Moustakas as a player. I like Mike Moustakas as a person. That contract shocked me. And it was, I think, a lot more than any other team out there would pay. So I think that they are going to continue to be, you can call it efficient. You can call it excessive. You can call it pragmatic. You can call it whatever you want. They're going to continue to be mathematically driven on those lower level players, but if you then are the union and you cut off the top end guys, what are you doing? Like, what value are you providing for your player population if you're doing something that automatically puts a ceiling on what guys individually can earn?
So you think that Patrick Mahomes is not going to get paid then, because there's a cap?
No, I think Patrick Mahomes will get paid. I think if football were an uncapped system, Patrick Mahomes would get paid way more than he will. That's my point.
I wouldn't argue that. I just, you know, to me, like you said, you're shocked at the contract that Mike Moustakas got. I mean, isn't that contract, though, if you're trying to build a collective team, not just have the better individual, is Manny Machado worth, what, five times Mike Moustakas' contract?
I mean, that's, you know, that is not an unreasonable question to ask. I would look at it more like average annual value, and Moustakas is getting 16 a year, and Manny Machado is getting 30 a year. So we're looking.
Is he twice as good?
Yeah, we're looking at 2x there, and I think you could make an argument, yes, that Manny Machado is worth 2x what Mike Moustakas is.
Ooh, okay. All right. Boy, I need to own a baseball team. I think I could smoke these guys. Jeff Passan is with us here in the program. I'm very good at
John Sherman took on a lot of limited partners in buying the team. We gotta get you, like, we gotta have you hit the Kansas lottery or something, man.
Yeah.
I would love to see front office Petro and see how this works.
My phone never rang, and let my fantasy trophies and bobbleheads speak for themselves, auction style. So I deal with payroll. So I'm ready to go. All right, final four time for you, Jeff. Let's start you with this. You mentioned taking your son to baseball practice. What position does he play?
Shortstop and pitcher.
Oh, so he's one of the good kids. Wow, impressive.
He's okay. He has grown to the point now where he is 12 years old, and very soon he's going to be able to kick my ass.
the funny line here would be, that's not saying much, but I don't want to demean
yourself. But you wouldn't dare. You wouldn't dare utter the funny line.
Never. Never. I would never say that. Never. All right. What date do we get an agreement? We both agree they will eventually get one. What's the date?
June 11th.
Okay. When is the next time?
By the way, totally off the top of my head. I think that's a week from Friday. That sounds about right.
Okay. Okay. When will you next be in Bristol, Connecticut?
Ooh, soon, I hope. I'm going to say July. Let me think. I think around July 11th or 12th.
Okay.
Because my son, the elder one, goes to camp during the summer up in New Hampshire. And if I'm going to be up in New Hampshire, I might as well make the trip to Bristol.
All right, good to know. And finally, will we see kneeling for the anthem in baseball this year?
No.
No.
You're going to see a lot of it in football, but not in baseball.
Okay. Jeff, great talking to you, buddy. Stay healthy, and we look forward to talking to you again next week.
Looking forward to it, pal. Take care.
All right, Jeff Passan, he's the best. He breaks all the stories. He's got all the answers. Love talking baseball with Jeff Passan. Love talking just about anything. Fun guy. Jeff Passan, you hear him only here in the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jeff Passan brought to you by our friends at Joe's Kansas City Barbecue.
The program with Soren Petro.
Curtis.
Yeah, sounds good.
Thank you.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We're almost done for the day, but there's just a few more things we'd like to share.
But there's still more.
Here's the kicker.
Here's the kicker of this whole thing.
On the program.
But first, a good sense into the hour answer. How many players have logged their 3,000th hit as a triple? That number is 2. Paul Molitor, 1996.
Paul Molitor, yeah.
Ichiro Suzuki also did it. Our friend Jamie Bloomer reminded us he was at the Molitor game in the bullpen.
Wow, very cool. GoodSenseSubs.com. Put your order in right now. That's what we were playing for. GoodSenseSubs.com. That loyalty club gets you 10% back. And don't forget about those GoodSense to go meals. They are absolutely perfect, particularly if you're grabbing meals for somebody who's older or staying home because of an immune system. You can give them a great, great meal with the GoodSense to go meals. Mizzou football players led a march today to the Columbia Courthouse. They knelt for 8 minutes, 46 seconds. To honor the life of George Floyd and demand justice. Coach Aliyah Drinkwitz said in a statement, 62 athletes then registered to vote. How about that? That's some good.
Yep.
Coming from it.
Number
Very one,
nice.
Making the statement. And, of course, the 8 minutes and 46 seconds was how long Floyd was pinned down by the officers. And then one other one, HBO releasing a two-part Tiger Woods documentary this fall. We've said, what do you want to see a last dance of? Tiger Woods was one of the popular answers. HBO is going to give it to you. It's coming to you this fall. Back at it tomorrow. We'll see you in the program.
WHB.